That we would breathe in the very words of God breathed out in the Holy Spirit. So it's a very mystical way of looking at some core principles of our faith, like prayer and the scriptures are very spiritual, aren't they? So much of what we're doing is we're looking at how do we build and pursue a spiritual life? Because the gospel moved us from a place of spiritual death. Now we're moving into a spiritual life where we can have communion and relationship with God. Is that good news? So, but where the rubber meets the road for us often has a lot to do with our daily life and our rhythms, our schedules. Now, one of the things I wrote in the margins of my notes is that if you show me your schedule, I will be able to show you what you believe. Deep down in your heart, what you truly believe, your schedule, your rhythms of life, will function in accordance to what you believe. Now, the fundamentals of our society, the cornerstone of our society's belief, where they put all of the weight of their life and they lean it upon and they trust this stone to hold them up and they build everything according to that stone. That stone in our society is self-sufficiency, independence, trust in our own strength and ability. That's what our society is built upon. You make your own way, decide your own way, you're your own master, but you get to figure this out for yourself. So when we look at people's schedules, we look at how our culture functions. What do we see? People who can't stop working. Right? So now with the age of the internet and technology, it's chronic. People who can't stop checking their emails at night. People who can't, even after they've left the office, if they leave the office, they're going to work from home. Right? So I'm going to not only work all day long, I'm going to let that bleed into my evenings. And I'm going to let that bleed into my nights. And then once it's taken up all my weekdays, I'm going to let it bleed into my weekends. Work, 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 strive, strive, strive. I'm going to let it bleed into holidays, which I don't really need to take. I need to work. And so this is the pattern, the culture of our society as a whole, isn't it? Now, what we're talking about then is how does our beliefs impact the way we look at and function and manage in our time? So how does what we believe determine how we look at time? Now, our relationship with time in this modern life is a complicated relationship. If I ask most people, how you doing? What's one of the number one answers? We could do like Family Feud right now and go, what are the top three answers to the question, how you doing? Busy. Busy. Right? That's the big one, isn't it? Oh, busy. Because I don't like saying I'm busy, you know, I'm going to say, wow, it's crazy. Tom and Barb asked me that this morning. How are you doing? It's crazy. Right, so our relationship with time, predominantly our confession about it, I think it's different based on your stages of life. Right, but when you're a child, time is not a good thing. The only time anyone talks about time to you as a child is when it's about constricting you. It's about boundaries. It's about bedtime. Right? Bedtime is not a good time when you're a child. Right? But as you get older, you start having kids, you have a family, time is something that you're always warring against, I find. It's more like time is pushing me from behind, and I don't have any of it. It's just craziness, work and kids and sporting events and all that. The predominant theme of that stage of life is about managing time. Time management. We've got to get ahead of this. We've got to be on this. We've got to be scheduled. What's the calendar say? What are we doing with our lives? That's the conversation my wife and I have on a daily basis. Okay, but then maybe you hit retirement. And now it's a world-changing moment. Right? You go from managing time like crazy to going, what do I do with this time? There's a lady on my block who just retired from teaching this year. I asked her, so how's retirement? She's like, what do I do? Right? Those first few years are pretty traumatizing. It's a big change, isn't it? But then as life goes on, you start to come to old age, and now time is something that I don't have enough of. I'm running out. Now it's time is sand in my hands, and it's running through my fingers. So when I go into the seniors' homes and do visits there, that's the sense. It's over. I've run out. I'm down to my last days. What do I do with them? It's a complicated relationship with time, isn't it? So, how does Jesus then change and reframe how we look at all of this? Because our society is entirely about how you use your time for productivity. That's the only thing that our society really cares about with time. Use it for productivity, sorry, or use it for leisure. Right? And that's it's kind of the all or nothing. I'm all work or no work. It's all I do or I don't want anything to do with this. I want to shut off every part of me and just be entertained for a moment. So this back and forth, trying to figure this out. But something in us longs for a more natural function, don't we? I think our society longs for it. We look at the seasons and we go, I want to feel one with what's happening naturally in the world. I want to be a part of something healthy and holistic. These are the type, we're on the island, for crying out loud. We've got to talk about these things. Right? We want to get in touch with this kind of deep longing within us to have more natural, healthy ways of living. So, we have all this kind of competing things that are going on in our lives, but what I want to look at today is how Jesus views this stuff. How the gospel changes our rhythms. Because so much of what our world is asking us to do is rhythms of accomplishment. But the gospel runs contrary to that and says our rhythms are of grace. Our rhythms are of receiving. Now, when we look at Mark chapter 2, we have an interesting kind of conversation that's taking place in this moment. And really it centers around what's the purpose of a holy day, of a sacred time. Is there sacred time, and how do we use it? And so it all centers around this idea of the Sabbath, which is this God-instated day for his people, the people of Israel, where they rest. On the seventh day of the week, they rest. And it goes all the way back to the creation story, doesn't it? Which means it's pre-fall. It's pre-sin, this vision. And it's this idea that God has so faithfully done his work in 6 days that the seventh day is set apart as sacred for rest and enjoyment of the completed work. Now, who feels, after 6 days, as though they have completed absolutely everything and there is nothing left to do but rest and enjoy the fruits of their labors? Only Karin feels that way. I never feel that way. I never feel so far ahead of all of my responsibilities that I can't even imagine anything else left to do. That's the vision here. So then when God saves his people out of Egypt, he instates this day as part of their life rhythm to say, on the seventh day, you will rest and remember me. You'll remember my redemptive work for you. You'll remember all I've accomplished for you. And you're not allowed to do any work because I've done everything necessary for you. That's the vision of the Sabbath. So then comes Jesus, God in flesh, walking with his disciples, and they're walking near a grain field. And the Pharisees are with them. Jesus is kind of teaching and walking, and so the crowds are following, the religious leaders are present, and the disciples, without a care in the world, kind of, start plucking grain from the field and eating it. As a prairie boy, that's just what you do. It's the way I grew up. So you're plucking, I can almost imagine, you grab the stalk, and you pull it up, and there's grain and chaff in your hand, and you're crunching as you go. One of my favorite snacks when I was in elementary school as a kid was roasted wheat, and it had like chip flavors on it. I haven't seen that in years. I'm having nostalgia. So, but this is the picture. They're eating grain as they go, but according to the Pharisees' understanding of the Sabbath, the disciples are breaking the law. See, what they've done is they've taken these holy days and they put very explicit and specific expectations for how you can spend that day. How many steps you can take, what kind of things you can do, and what kind of things you can't do. Even to the point we see throughout the Gospels, when Jesus heals on the Sabbath, they get upset because they consider that work. We won't get into those texts. So here's this idea of like, how do we live out sacred time? Are there sacred and holy spaces within our life that we're meant to commune with and participate with God? Does he have a particular purpose on these times? Now, by the end of this section, Jesus' response to them is kind of the main thing I want to focus on is the verse that he gives here. Verse 27. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. So Jesus' claim here is that he is Lord over all the holy days. He's Lord over the sacred times. And so what we want in our Christian vision of time and life is we want to see Jesus as that, don't we? So what this means is this. I'm going to be very clear right now before we unpack this. Jesus is Lord of our schedule. Do you want that? Jesus is Lord of the time that we have in this life. Do we want that? Jesus is Lord over creating sacred spaces. Time in this life that are for communion and participation with him. So let's look at what that looks like in kind of ancient Christian patterns today, ancient rhythms. Now, the island wants ancient grains and things like that, but not ancient ways of living. Okay, we need some of that. We need some of that ancient life. Okay? So the first and foremost thing is that in all of this, if Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath, Jesus is Lord of the sacred times, Jesus is Lord of all time, the point is this, everything about this life now for us as Christians, our number one purpose for continuing to live is to participate with Jesus. Hear me. Your primary occupation, whether you have newborns, whether you're right in the midst of raising children, whether you are retired, whether you're in a career or starting another one, it doesn't matter. Our primary occupation because of the gospel is to receive the gospel. Okay? So that, let's lay that as our first thing. Our primary life is a spiritual life. So we want to live in rhythms of grace. That our life would be sustained not by our own strength and our own abilities, but by God's strength and God's abilities and God's provision. So we live in a posture of receiving what he has accomplished for us. That is the fundamental of the Christian faith. Do we agree? Our fundamental occupation is to receive grace by faith. So we trust in it. What we want to do then is we want to order our lives in such a way that there is a constant receiving of the gospel. I think within our society, we tend to view history like it's linear, right? There's a beginning and there's an end. That's the way time works, right? Time is always just going forward. In the gospel, time is viewed more as a circle, a cycle that we're moving through over and over and over again. And each day kind of represents that cycle. It's like a pattern that we follow. Think, for example, each day begins by waking up, right? If we're lucky, if we haven't stayed up all night. I read this quote by one of my favorite Old Testament scholars named Eric Ortlund. He says, "It's interesting how each day is a human life in miniature. The earliest moments of incoherence, the early burst of work," I don't know what that feels like personally, "but the attenuated energy in the lengthening hours of afternoon, final fatigue in the evening, and then death, the senility of evening." That each day is kind of a pattern of the whole, isn't it? We go through the whole cycle of life in a day and start it all over again. What we want is we actually want that pattern to be the gospel. We want to move through the gospel every day. We want to be moving through all that God has for us in that. So considering the order of our days, it begins with this awakening. Is coming to life. And we join God in a work that he has already been doing. You will spend 2/3 of your life sleeping. Think of that for a moment. 2/3 of your total life will be spent sleeping. At the beginning of your days when you were a baby, you slept a lot, didn't you? And the same is true on the other end of things. I've noticed now already. I can sleep at the drop of a hat. I love it. It's my favorite thing to do now. Okay, and I remember when I was a kid and my grandpa, he would always say to me, "We'll play after lunch, but first I need a power nap." He'd always say, "I need a power nap." I don't know what a power nap was, but I knew he came out with great power afterwards. That's when we would sit there. We literally, us boys would sit there and just wait for him to finish his nap. And then he'd wake up and be like, "Okay, let's go." Right? But that's we have to be more honest about our life. We think our life is about what we do, what we accomplish, how hard we work. But in reality, it's the smaller portion of our existence. Isn't that crazy to consider? In those dark hours, though, God is working. Eugene Peterson has some great stuff on this. The idea is that we wake up in the middle of God's already occupation. He's already working, and we kind of wake up and stumble into it and join him. It's a very different picture than I am the center of the universe, and all things happen based on my investment of effort. It's a very different picture, isn't it? So we wake and join him in his work. And if we were to follow the ancient practice of the hours of prayer, let's say we just did 4 instead of the more consistent seven. The picture of it is this. We join our Father in a work he's already doing. And then at least four times throughout the day, we stop to make sure that we're working the way he wants us to work in the work he's doing. I remember being young and working on a construction site for the first time, helping build a house. I didn't know a thing. Didn't know what I was doing. And building a house is not just something you can just figure out on your own. You got to do it right. You got to do it to code, right? And if you're a young, green rookie on the job site, the most responsible thing you can do is what? Make sure you're following the instructions. We tend to go through life going, I'll just figure it out. And God is working, building a life for us. And we're going to run off and do it on our own. Instead, what we should be doing is working with our foreman. Ensuring that we're doing things according to code and to the way he wants. Because what happens if you do a bunch of work and it's not the right way? What does the foreman make you do? We're going to do it over again. Right? Now, and here we have the eternal God as our Father, and he's patient. And see, he's happy to go, we got time. Let's tear it all down. Let's try this again. But this time, let's do it together. But the hours of prayer are simply this idea that let's do it with him. Let's follow what he's doing. Follow his lead, build the way he's leading, and build the way according to the vision he has for us. Instead of, because I'll be honest with you, most of our lives, God is trying to build us a good home. And we're somewhere behind the dumpster, pulling out random pieces of garbage, and fashioning a little makeshift tent and going, look, I built a house. I'm going to have kids here. I'm going to raise a family in this. We just wing it. But God's picture for our life is to go, no, there's a way, an ancient way of living this life. Follow me in the midst of it as I build it. And so he's the main builder. He's the foreman. And each day is his to accomplish. And he does it despite our ramblings. So the order then of our lives is meant to be more about what he's doing than what we're doing. So let's break down a little bit. When we take time for prayer, so we've been seeking together as a parish, I've been encouraging us to follow the hours of prayer, morning, midday, evening, and night. Just the four. And it doesn't mean it's the full hour. The idea is just at the top of that hour that we would take time for prayer. Okay? So that's kind of what we've been moving towards. Now, when we look at the pattern of our daily prayer, notice how it moves through it. It does the same thing. It starts with an opening verse. Remember God is what the opening verse does. Remember he's the foreman. He's the one building. And then it leads us to a place of softening of heart to recognize, where am I running on my own here? Right? Because sin is always going to draw me into taking care of myself. Sin is always going to draw me into being an orphan trying to build his own house instead of a son who's receiving a house as an inheritance from his father. You see the difference? So sin's always going to want to draw me out. To me, 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 focus on me, my strength, my ability, what I know what to do. And the gospel is always going to be drawing me to my Father who loves me. So it's a softening of heart where we can be honest about what's inside of us. And that softening leads to a confession of our sin. So we're confessing to God, I was off building my own thing here. And here's my inheritance. I come back to you. Then we go to the readings. We read from the Psalm. We read from the Old Testament and the New Testament. We get reacquainted with the way. Our story, our family line and our lineage and what it looks like to live rightly with our Father and to take warning from those who didn't. Right? Right now, I'm reading in Kings and in Isaiah, these types of Old Testament books, and I'm going, right, I can see where the nation went off, and I can see where my heart wants to do that too. I can see where this king led wrongly, and I can see where I want to lead my house wrongly. I can see where Hezekiah is a good king, and the nation followed that. That's the kind of man I want to be. Right? So I'm reading from the old way as a reminder of how to live this way. And then it leads to the Apostles' Creed, the confession of my faith. This is the strength. This is my cornerstone, Jesus, the Apostles' Creed. So I'm going to confess his life, his death, his resurrection, and his ascension. Those are my hope, not my own strength. And then I'm going to go into the Lord's Prayer, where I remember my sonship. God is my Father in heaven, that he's holy and good, that I want his kingdom to come. I don't want to build my own kingdom. I want his will to be done because his will is good. And mine's going to leave me in some spots I don't want to go. And I want it to be in this current life as it is in heaven. I want to look to him for my daily bread, all my provision. I don't have to steal. I don't have to fight. I don't have to make it myself. I'm going to receive it from my Father's fields, a bounty. I want my sins forgiven, and I want to forgive all those who've sinned against me. I want to walk in the good way. So lead me not into temptation and deliver me from evil, because it's going to set traps for me. And I don't want to fall into them. Father, keep me. But all of this, it's your kingdom, it's your power, and it's your glory, because you're doing all the work. Do you see it? Then I do the intercession where I pray for other people in my life. I pray for my kids. I pray for you. I pray for my brothers and their wives and their families. And I pray for my neighbors that they would come to know Christ. And then close with a collective prayer that we're all praying together. This is the rhythm of grace. Is that I'm ensuring that I'm eating grace as surely as I'm eating other food. That this is my highest priority. That's the order of prayers. It keeps me soft. It keeps me believing in the cross. It keeps me participating in the resurrection. And it keeps me hoping in his ascension. Now, by the end of my day, I've worked with my Father. I've ensured that I've come back to him in prayer. It's going to lead me to a place where I need to do one thing. Sleep again. And sleep doesn't come to those easily who are trusting in themselves, does it? Because if your life is predicated on how good and strong and smart you are, what's going to happen when your head hits that pillow and you stare at the dark ceiling? Your heart's going to go, we have a lot of worries, a lot of anxieties, a lot of problems we need to solve, a lot of things we need to do, and sleep doesn't come easily, does it? Does it? And it's a sure sign of the state of our heart. Psalm 127 speaks of this. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Now, the holiest person in the room on this subject is Karen Semple. She's in bed by like 4:30. I'm going to tease you about this forever. But to be honest, her schedule I find compelling because it's actually more natural. The invention of electricity has pushed our days long into the night. Right? In the old days, you didn't have electricity. You didn't stay up watching TV. You could only read for so long because candlelight does get a little old. Hard on the eyes. But that's the reality. We get out of touch with what's natural and normal because of that. So our days push us, though, again to a spot where we have to trust God to be enough and we are put to sleep. That he's going to sustain us while we're in an incapacitated state. He'll protect us and provide for us. Just as that's the pattern of a day, it's the pattern of the week. We work the 6 days, but then God calls us to a Sabbath day of rest. A day where we trust in him completely. And in an ancient world with warring countries, the idea of taking a day off was a death sentence. For Israel, it was a death sentence. You can't afford to not work one day of the week. You'll be attacked on that day. Your harvest will be lost. You have got to stay on it. You've got to control it. You've got to watch it. But just as the Lord has ordered each day to cycle in the gospel, to rhythm in his grace, so each week leads us back to a place where we come to him and we set a time aside just to eat at his table. The family meal, the feast of grace. Do you see it? Jesus is the pattern that our life is meant to follow. Every moment dependent upon his grace. Every day dependent upon his grace. Every week dependent upon his grace. And seasons devoted to receiving particularly from his grace. And this is the ancient custom of the Christian church. We have a Christian calendar. You're Anglicans because you know this. Most people don't know this. The Pentecostals I grew up with didn't know that Christianity had a calendar. And it's a year designed in a circle to ensure that we cycle through the whole of the gospel, through seasons of the year, every year of our life. This is the pattern that we follow, which is the good news of Jesus. So what do we do? What are we coming up on in December? In the Christian calendar? Advent. So Advent, we celebrate the first and second coming of Christ. Christmas, most people know, is the Christian calendar. Right? So we move through the whole of the gospel. From Christmas to Epiphany. Epiphany to Lent. Lent to Easter. Eastertide to Pentecost. This is the movement of the annual Christian schedule, that every day there are sacred times with God, every week there is sacred time with God, and there are seasons that are sacred time for God. And we want to live in these rhythms of grace, don't we? Where we devote a whole season, just like we do in the fall, we devote a season to harvest. Because why? Because there are certain fruits that have germinated and grown in that season for us to pluck and enjoy, right? Harvest is a real feast here on the island. I've never realized what that's like. The harvest I grew up with went into grain bins, then it went to the granary, then it went to a train, and it was gone. Never saw it again. But here, your neighbors are going, "I got more than I need. Hope you like figs." I've never had figs. Right? That's what it's like. Here's hazelnuts. And it's this wealth. Because it grows at that time and you can't go, "I'd actually rather pick that in December." Well, it's not going to be there. But this picture that we have here is that going, there are set times of the year that the church for thousands of years and all over the world we'll celebrate at a single time because God is making it available afresh to deepen in us in a way that we've never experienced before. I want every Christmas to be like the first Christmas. Every Easter to be like the first. It's a deepening that something new of his grace would be harvested and enjoyed that we didn't have before. So it's why we're kind of steering towards going, some people are moving away from things like prayer books and the church calendar and things like that. But this is the stuff that keeps us on and in the gospel. If We are keeping soft hearts that are enjoying and receiving them. And that's what we want, isn't it? We want to ever be enjoying and receiving the gospel. And so my practical challenge for us would be, can we keep on this? Can we leave a heritage for the next generations of rich life in daily prayer? Can we cultivate old and new traditions so that people see the gospel clearly in our church here? Can we devote our whole lives to receiving Jesus and viewing these times as sacred and worth giving our full attention to and our hearts to? Amen? Amen. Well, pray with me as we prepare our hearts for the table. Heavenly Father, we give our hearts to you afresh today. Further deepen us our devotion to the gospel, our commitment to it, our dependence upon it. Lord, let us see Jesus afresh today and receive him from the parts of our hearts and our lives that we need him most. Lord, lead us into participation with him now as we eat of grace at your table. Amen.